don't think people realize the amount of effort and work that goes into like running with these tech companies. Like, you're not just working with a developer and like coming out with a cool product. Like, you're raising money, you're doing customer support, you're in sales. You're clearly, like you just said, you're working.
Welcome to the How to Build an App podcast. We started this show to help app founders refine their idea, build insanely useful apps, scale it up, and change the world. This podcast is brought to us by you and your ideas. We fund this podcast from our full-service app development agency, Strides Development. When you're ready to build an amazing app, we can help you take it from idea to a finished app in a few months. Right now, we're offering a free strategy call to talk to you about your app and give some direction when it comes to building it. You can book your call at strides.dev. That's strides.dev. Welcome back to How to Build an App. I'm your host, Austin Betzer, and I'm here with our co-host, Beaudry Price. If your tech startup interests cross over into the podcasting realm, you definitely won't want to miss this episode.
So this week, we're talking with Josh Nelson, the founder of Zencastr. For those of you who don't know, Zencastr is a really awesome web-based tool that makes it easier for podcasters to record high-quality video and audio.
I'm super excited for this episode because I think it's going to be really relatable for our listeners. Josh shares his own personal experiences of struggle, rejection, failure, and his way to success. And you'll also hear the story about how Zencastr came into existence, the problems Josh faced and overcame along the way, and even his own advice on what it takes to succeed as a tech startup.
So we even get to hear about him chasing love to Australia, surfing in Hawaii, moving to Thailand, and a bunch of other really cool experiences along the way.
It's going to be awesome. Let's get started.
So Josh is with us today, Josh Nelson. Josh is the founder and CEO of Zencastr. Is that correct, Josh?
Yep.
All right.
Yep. So, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited. So Josh has done it. Josh has been around the block when it comes to building these tech companies. We'll kind of jump into a few questions. But Josh, let's learn a little bit about who you are and tell us about yourself, just so, you know, kind of a nutshell.
Yeah, grew up in Texas, moved around a lot, spent some time in Idaho, like you guys as well. And
it's probably what made you that really entrepreneur, really successful. It was those years in Idaho, right, Austin?
they really teach you how to hustle over there. Yeah.
It's funny. I was living with some family out there, and my uncle that I was living with was kind of there was always this contention in the house where the mom was trying to get all the kids to go to college, and the dad was like, "Forget about college, it's stupid." But yeah, so it was just about myself, man, all over. I move around a lot. I've got into startups in LA. I dropped out of college, got my first startup job in a company called Mahalo in Los Angeles.
What were you going to school for? Like, what were you starting to do? Was it in computer science?
I wanted to be like a mechanical engineer, but, you know.
That's hard.
Yeah, it was like all this math. I didn't want to do.
I don't know a single dumb electrical engineer, mechanical engineer. I was always leaning on them in my computer science classes to get through stuff.
Yeah, no, that was the thing. You got to take all of this math. And I just, it's not like I couldn't do it, but I realized that there was other guys in these classes that were really enjoying this stuff. And I thought maybe,
you know, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
He's like, these guys are loving it. I'm over here like, this sucks.
Yeah. I mean, the thing that I did like about it was like the problem solving aspect. We need something that's this big, weighs this much, got to do this, and is, you know, hopefully efficient and works well. Right. And so as I was kind of trying to find my path, I took a web design class as like an elective. And I was just like, wow, this is like engineering, but you can see the things move and it does stuff, and you don't have to, the computer does the math for you. And like,
you're like, wait, I don't have to do it. We have tools, or we're building tools to do that.
Yeah.
So I'm still solving problems, but I don't have to have nearly as much math. That's what it sounds like.
Yeah. That was kind of where it came from. And so I just got kind of sucked down that path, and I just kind of became obsessed with programming and building things. And, you know, the potential that I saw there was just, it was just fun. It was like Legos on steroids, I guess. And so I wasn't trying to be an entrepreneur. I wanted to be a programmer. This is like my new thing. And I'd heard that, like, mm-hmm. At startups, they give you like free lunch. And as a poor college kid, I was like, hey man, I'm going to get me some of that, some of those perks, you know? and so I started kind of heading towards the startup scene, and Anyway,
for free food. That's what that was.
Yeah, more or less. Like, now there was a company in LA that was programming in Python and Django, which is what I was really interested in at the time, and they were hiring, and so I got a job with them. Happened to be the CEO of that company was Jason Calacanis, who does like the This Week in Startups podcast and podcast network and all that stuff. He used to have like guys like Elon Musk coming in and doing interviews office. And so I just kind of got really sucked into the startup culture at that point. And I realized after working there that, you know, I kind of got to see what I don't know if high scale is the right word, but a much higher scale than my personal website, right? How that works and the systems in place. And I kind of got a little bit of confidence that I could, hey, maybe I could build something myself. I was a bit delusional. I mean, it ended up being so much, there's so many more soft skills. I kind of really just thought it was about building a product, like an application.
Just building code, just to be able to code, right?
I thought it was just about the code, you know? Yeah. And then I learned pretty quickly that that's not all it's about.
That might be our headline right there. Like I thought it was about the code, but really it's not, right? That's pretty.
Yeah. Cool. And so, you know, I really enjoy that side of things, but there's been many times and even now in the business where we've had to like, okay, let's get some other skills. You're gonna have to learn a little bit of sales, a little bit of how to, you know, run customer support, how to lead people, how to do, even before all that, product validation. And, you know, I made that mistake. The first business I tried to build with some buddies, we were all musicians and we wanted to build this app for musicians. And we thought since we were musicians, we didn't really need to talk to musicians because we got this, right?
You know.
It's like, yeah, I'm the customer. It makes sense. I know exactly what the market wants, right? And I think a lot of people just starting their companies kind of get sucked into that mentality for sure. It's super easy to do. And I think that's like a good segue. Let's kind of jump into like your background and like before, you know, a little bit before Zencastr, but like how did you get started and what did you, like when did you realize that you needed to create Zencastr?
So I left Mahalo after like 18 months. That was the company in LA. It was, LA was just too big for me.
You were in LA, right?
Yeah, like Santa Monica. So okay. Surrounded by LA with the beach on the side. So it's not a horrible place. It's just expensive and yeah. it's surrounded by LA, you know? And yep. So
it's surrounded by LA. Enough said.
Yeah. So I was like, huh, I really wanted to do startups, but LA is too crazy. I went to Boulder. I moved to Boulder, Colorado because I'd heard like Techstars is out of there. And I was just like, I'm just going to move out there and then figure out, I'm going to bug them until they start talking to me. And so that's what I did. And they turned me down like 3 or 4 times, but eventually they said, hey, you know, maybe you don't have like a good business idea right now, but, or with our traction or anything, but we like what you're building. Let's hire you as a developer in residence to help the other companies get their products ready for demo day. So I was like, hey, that sounds cool. I'm not, you know, I'm just trying to get involved any way I can anyway. So I did that for the summer 2012 class or whatever, you know, so just, that was a great experience. Got to kind of see how they run Techstars from the inside, got to see like which companies made it and which ones didn't and how many didn't make it, you know, and, you know, it was just kind of a good way to, again, see how the sausage is made and, again, delude myself into thinking that I could do it too. Anyway, I left there, started a company called Soundkeep.
Soundkeep?
Soundkeep. Just Soundkeep like that .com. And the idea was a place for, it's kind of like a GitHub for music, a place for electronic musicians to collaborate and create music together online. You could remix each other and all this stuff.
That's super cool.
Yeah.
It was fun. It was a fun idea. We never really got it fully off the ground, I think in the right way, but also, you know, I think we just had a flawed thesis from the beginning, which was that musicians wanted to collaborate like this. I think the blind spot that we had is that we were musician programmers. So we knew about GitHub and how all that works and that open source ethos and whatnot. That is not how most musicians think. I mean,
yeah, those are two sides of the brain, aren't they?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, 'cause for me, music was more of a hobby. It was something for fun. I wasn't trying to like cut tracks and make an album and get signed or anything. But for guys that are, they do not want anybody taking their audio or doing anything with it or remixing it or anything. Like that was like, no, that's my baby. That could be my hit. Nobody's touching it. Right. So that was, I think, the big problem there. Now, there were other companies that were doing a lot of these popped up at that time, because that's right when the web audio and hit the scene. And so there was all these new tools in the browser, and it was like, oh, not only could you, you know, maybe do something like Ableton Live, but in the browser with collaboration, and saw like this really cool idea. And some did go on and do that, and had some successful exits and whatever. But we didn't have any money. We were just doing this ourselves, and I don't think we had anything we could pitch to get money, really. At least I wasn't at the point at that time where I could convince investors without any traction or revenue to, you know, give me money. That's a tough sell.
Very. Hold on, listeners. That's a really tough sell to sell on an idea, right? You got to have traction, right? And you've been through the process, and we'll go over that, but that's a good little gem right there for sure.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't try, because I did, but you start to learn pretty quickly that I wouldn't say I wasn't like laughed out of the room, but you start to notice that you kind of, the people that were really honest with me were like, look, this is not something we've only seen before, but like dozens of times, and it never works. And you know, music, trying to start a startup in music at all is kind of like a red flag for most investors. They just, you have to like get over that hump, because it's such a treacherous space to be in. There's no money. Nobody's making money, really.
Yeah.
And so it's hard to paint that picture. But anyway, moving on, that didn't really work out. But
it definitely got you into like the world of audio, right? Like, this is probably something where you're like, okay, we understand the world of audio. We understand like there's needs here. And that probably kind of pivoted to where we're at now, right?
Yeah. Like when we started building Soundkeep, it was right when the web audio API was coming out, even kind of before. It was just when there was some of these like HTML5 audio elements coming out. And as we were building it, they started launching like the Get User Media API and like just all the web audio nodes that you can filter audio and pipe it around and do stuff. And so it was kind of like, man, we're doing this audio stuff, and now all this really cool audio stuff is coming. And anyway, I did that. That did get me to learn like what the capabilities are here, and we just had the wrong application for it. But as we were pitching that around, I think I went to like Techstars for a day in San Antonio, because I was still trying to get in with this new company, and which didn't work. But again, you just can't, especially Techstars, their deal flow is so high that if you don't have traction in a pretty much successful business already, it's not worth it. You know, they got too many options.
Waste of time.
Yeah. That used to be different, you know, 10 years ago, but that's not how it is anymore. Anyway, I learned all the capabilities of that stuff, had the wrong application. I was in San Antonio talking to like some of their mentors, and I think these were just like other people that were in their current Techstars class. And one of them just said, look, I don't know about music, but I know podcasters have a problem with audio quality, and this same thing that you built could help with them. And he's like, I know 15 of them that would sign up, would pay for something like this. And I was like,
and who was this?
I don't even remember, to be honest. It was just like,
somebody you were just talking to, right?
It was one of the mentors at the Techstars. It was like mentor dating. You get like 5 minutes with this guy, 5 minutes with this guy. And it was just one of the things one person said.
Five minutes and your life changed.
Seriously, that's crazy. Yeah, that's super awesome.
Well, what was funny is when he said it, I was like, that's cool, but you know, we're a music company. We're not, we don't do pod, you know, I know what we're building. All right.
Leave me alone.
It was kind of my attitude. I even brought that back to the team of guys, and we even whiteboarded it, what it would be. And then I just think none of us really knew enough about it, and we were still kind of attached to our music idea. And so we just moved on and, you know, let that come, you know, rode that one into the ground. And then, you know, the team kind of fell apart, and I moved to Australia to chase, my now wife. And,
you won, by the way, apparently.
No, it worked. And while I was there, I found out we had a baby on the way. Before that, I had actually shifted gears. I was like, look, I want to build Ableton Live in the browser with collaboration. I'll do it myself if I have to. I think this is awesome. And I thought the capabilities were there. It still would be hard to do that even today, at least to be competitive, right? You could have a toy, but it's not going to drag people off of Ableton unless you had something really high tech. Anyway, that's what I was building. Then I found out we had a baby on the way, and I was like, okay, I don't really know how this could take me years. I don't really know what the path to revenue is. And I got some more immediate problems coming my way. And so I was like,
adventures, we like to call them. Okay, sometimes my children are problems. So, okay, fair enough.
I shouldn't have said problems, but like, at the time I was like, I got to solve for this situation. Like, I've got a baby on the way. My wife is from New Zealand, and she wanted to have the baby there, so nobody would hire me. I was applying for places in the US, but I was like, yeah, I really love a job. In 3 months, I do have to leave to New Zealand for like 9 months or more, or however long it was going to be. And that wasn't, nobody wanted to do that. And so I was, and this is before remote was as popular. So yeah, I decided, hey, let's prototype something really quick. I started talking to some podcasters finally. I finally decided, okay, let's talk to some people, potential customers first. But I didn't do that much. I talked to like 5 guys, and one of them was like, I'll pay you $20 a month for that. And when I heard that, I was like, hey, I could build this quick enough to just try. And I wanted to anyway. It sounded like a fun project. And because I had all the kind of pieces and I'd been learning about all this stuff. And I was like, finally, I can put it together something that maybe works for something that's a total product. So I started off on like a 6-week prototype thing. Like 6 or 8 months later, I finally had, you know, a very rough working prototype. And I, you know, it was more of an alpha.
You developed yourself, right? Because you're a web developer. That's your thing.
Yeah. No, it was just me at that point. I started there in Australia, came back to the US for a bit. Then I went to New Zealand. That's where I launched the beta. I mean, aside from that it was buggy, it actually was working for a lot of people, and they were sharing it. Other people were signing up. Their guests were signing up after they recorded. And so I was like, oh, wow. You know, because I think with SoundKeep, we got like, I don't know, maybe 50 people to sign up. Like, there were people to check it out, but it wasn't that compelling. And this, so I was like, hey, like, people are signing up every day. This is something's better than before. Like, this is different. Yeah.
That's quite the undertaking.
I was going to say, that's product market fit, right? That alone.
Yeah, seriously.
Yeah, I don't know if I was even thinking about it in those terms at the time, but yeah. I was just like, this is more fun than people not using it. And I'm getting feedback now.
And weird. Having a business is more fun when you have customers.
So. Yeah. And that was really when it kind of became easier. Because once you have a product that people are using and they're giving you constant feedback, then you don't have to hunt really. You know, it comes to you. You have to process it. But at that point in time, there was just so many obvious features that we didn't have, and I could rank them based on how many people wanted which ones the most. And you know, we're still in that phase, to be honest. So
still in that like early stage.
Well, you know, I think what we realized is that podcasters are not typically audiophiles, and this at this point we were just audio. They don't care so much about the audio quality in and of itself, which was our main value proposition. We can help
because you guys were
studio quality.
Yeah.
So for a while I thought kind of that I was kind of caught up in just focusing on that, which was the right thing to do. But as time went on, we had all these people coming in and signing up, and they would record, and you know, you start talking to them, they're trying to find and grow their audience. They're trying to get a message out. They're trying to sell a product. They're not trying to record in studio quality. Like, that's a means to an end for them. They like that because it helps them find and grow their audience or get their message out. And so, you know, we're in the process of, we actually just raised a round of financing, and we're in the process of basically expanding our tool set and feature set to be kind of a full service platform for podcasters, because there's the recording piece, but it's like, you got to find your guest first. You got to know what your podcast is even about. Then you got to schedule it. Then you got to edit it, which takes most of the time. Most of these guys are spending like 6 hours per episode on average. Just to publish a single episode that maybe 150 people listen to on average again. So we need
to appreciate the guys that edit all of our videos for us then.
Seriously.
Well, I mean, intense. Just the fact that you have guys editing your videos for you means it's that hard, right?
Yeah.
I guess that's fair.
True.
Imagine if you were using Instagram and you needed a professional editor to help you publish and post it. That's where podcasting is right now. And even notwithstanding that fact, there's still like a couple million podcasts out there. So imagine what happens if you can take that time of creation and cut it down to like maybe where most of the time you spend creating your podcast is just the conversation, and everything else is kind of automated and kind of a few clicks away. That's the goal.
And I want to say congrats on raising another round. That's like a huge deal. And that's something that we should talk about a little bit more. But when did you know that this, like, you had traction with your product? Like you said at the beginning, like you were getting, you know, people signing up every single day. But when did you decide, like, this is the thing, I'm going to go all in, I'm going to build a team, and we're going to build something, you know, just life-changing for people, right?
Yeah, yeah. So I launched it in New Zealand. I ran it for about a couple years, just by myself. Wow. Programming. So this was actually our first round of financing, this one we just did. It's been bootstrapped up until now, partially because I didn't have a component. No, you know, I kind of quit trying because I realized after a while you can't sell, unless you have traction or like a pedigree, you're pretty much wasting your time unless you just get super duper lucky. I kind of just was contracting on this. I got a job that was let me work, you know, kind of half to three quarters time. And then the rest of the time I spent on Zencastr. There was a point where it was just taking too long. You know, it was really hard to keep up with it, just doing it on the side like that. So there was a point when after we left New Zealand, we went to Thailand just because my visa expired and we wanted to go somewhere that was kind of affordable and hopefully fun and all that stuff to just launch it. And where I didn't know anybody. I wanted just total solitude so I could just focus. So we found this little villa with a pool in the jungle and on this island off of an island on a dead end road and just parked it and built it.
Josh, when they make a movie of your life, I want to watch it because, like,
yeah, this is crazy.
We've been to Australia, New Zealand, now we went to a remote island in Thailand just so you can focus and finish this project.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, at least that was how I saw it. I didn't want like kid birthday parties, nothing. I just needed to focus on this. And so, and it was a fun place where my wife liked to be, and I could. Yeah. She was happy for me to ignore her most of the time while they were hanging out on the beach and whatnot. But I launched it. Well, and I had to quit my job at a certain point because I was like, I'm not getting anywhere fast enough. So I quit my job and I took out I applied for like four credit cards on the same day so that
they wouldn't know about each other.
Yeah. And yeah. So I just like totally maxed out my credit and just lived on credit cards until I kicked on the paid plans. So that kind of put me in a position where I had to do it. And
yep. You committed yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Finally. And I think at that point we had maybe people were recording like 10,000 hours a month on the service.
Oh, wow.
And so I was like, people are using it. There's something here. Whether or not they're going to pay.
Wait, had you monetized by this point?
No.
Oh my gosh. So you're telling me you had all these people using your product and you had not monetized. What? Why?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I think that, you know, I just didn't have the money to grow a team, right? After we started making money, then I hired our first engineer. But I think maybe a more interesting question is how, because doing audio and recordings and all that stuff, I think at the end I was paying maybe before we launched paid plans, it was costing me about $300-$400 a month, which could have been a lot more.
Yeah, I was gonna say your cost wasn't crazy high on it.
No, it wasn't. And the key there was, at least initially, is I didn't store anybody's data. I mean, the very first version of Zencastr didn't even have VoIP built into it. It didn't have video. It just sat, you had to use Skype alongside of it. And it just, you also opened Zencastr and so did your guests and it would record them and then give you those files, but you still had the conversation through Skype. But in order to use Zencastr, you had to link your Dropbox account. And I would just send all that data straight to your Dropbox account so that I didn't have to pay for any of the ingress or the storage costs. I mean, that ended up being a clever way to offset costs, but that was really the only reason why, was just because I didn't have a path to revenue yet on it. And I was like, I'm not paying for this if I don't have to. So,
yeah, that's super, super clever. And I want to say too, like, the product just in and of itself, like you built a 6-week roadmap basically on getting something out. It took somewhere between 6 and 8 months. And so that right there should, you know, show people the complexity that goes into it. Like, it's a specialty to do both audio and video, like, engineering. Like, not any developer can just get those skills and just start doing stuff. I still don't even work on audio. And I have people approach us all the time for iOS apps and doing like some sort of like audio, like, I don't know, metronome things that I don't understand. And just, It's crazy. And so the fact that you just like committed all in, was that super hard from like just a development standpoint, like getting familiar with all those things? Let's talk about that really quick too. And then let's jump into like, was it just a money thing that you just like, that's creative just to decide, hey, I'm going to go put audio like in this Dropbox and we're going to use Skype and like do all this stuff. How did you put all those pieces together? That's just amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
you're giving me too much credit, but we were just trying to figure shit out.
Yeah, I'd love to think it was a master plan, but it was really just like one foot after the other. And I didn't have any experience with audio programming or any DSP background or any of that. I mean, I now have learned some of that stuff, but when we now have like specialized media engineers that are like,
yeah,
the real pros there. They're way, way more advanced than I was. Basically just, I kind of just brute forced my way into figuring it out rather than like that I was especially talented or anything. But
or creative, you just kind of just bowled your way through it, right?
Yeah.
You found a problem.
No, that's just, like creative perseverance for sure.
100%. Like you just figured it out, right? Like a problem arose and you just figured a solution.
I think the biggest contributor to the success was that I was enjoying it. I liked what I was doing. You know, if I hadn't been, because I remember when there was a point in the company where I wasn't making money, but a lot of people were using it, and I was customer support as well as engineering, and I just got totally bogged down, and to where most of my days were support, and then I would like look forward to like the nights and weekends where I could actually program, and so I think just. Kind of like, I don't know if you guys ever surfed, but like I lived in Hawaii for a little bit and
of course
I tried surfing and it's one of those things where you may not catch a wave the whole time you're out there. You have to just enjoy the process of the paddling. And if you enjoy that part, then you're going to like surfing and then you're going to catch some waves. But if you don't, then, you know, it's probably not the right sport. You know, you need to go, maybe basketball is for you.
That's seriously huge for everybody listening, just because I don't think people realize the amount of effort and work that goes into like running with these tech companies. Like you're not just working with a developer and like coming out with a cool product. Like you're raising money, you're doing customer support, you're in sales. You're clearly, like you just said, you're working, you know, I'm going to imagine somewhere between like 12, 18 hours a day between your full-time job, handling messages, doing either sales or discovery. And
he has a new baby. Don't forget
he has a new baby. Yeah, a new baby on the way. And so it's just like the grind of going in every single day, like, is going to be there. And I think some people just assume it's easy or it should happen fast. And it's just not true. It's going to take time and dedication. And I think most of all, perseverance. Like what you did was hard. And so that's like, that's super awesome. That's crazy.
I think you put in a term that's really like, paddling is the grind of surfing, right? Like that's the hardest part of surfing. That and the chafing of the chest and stuff. Yeah. Like, we'll only talk about that. But like, honestly, the grind of surfing is the paddling. But if you can get to the point where you enjoy the worst part of what you're doing, everything else is worth it. And you can continue to do that grind because you actually enjoy it. So like, I think that's an awesome like little nugget for our listeners. Like, do something you really do enjoy. And then once you enjoy it, like you, when you enjoy the worst part of your job and you still enjoy it, like, dude, you're living. Like that's really what it comes down to. You enjoy what you do every day, whether it's 15 or 30 hours a day, right?
Yeah.
And a question for you, how long, so you, I've heard, you know, 6 to 8 months of development. Now you're to the point where you've got, you know, 10,000 hours being recorded. How long did you go before you even took a paycheck, like in total? Cause that's the other thing. Like, I feel like most entrepreneurs are like monetized like super, super early.
Hmm.
And I think that just shows the passion you had for this project.
I you know, definitely that was part of it, but I think it just wasn't ready, or at least I didn't feel like it was ready to charge for was the bigger problem. And I would always get these emails where people are like, I mean, and I was probably wrong. I mean, because people were telling me even long before I started charging that I should be charging them and that they would pay, you know, even more than I ended up charging for it. So it was, part of it was confidence. Like it's scary. That's the point of reckoning. Like when you turn on the money, that's when you really know. And I think I was afraid. I would almost rather, and I don't think this was a healthy way to approach it, but I think I was almost stuck where I was afraid to know that answer.
You were scared that
once you put a value to your product, nobody would want it anymore.
Yeah, I had a hard time imagining that I'd built something that had value, just because it had never happened to me before. Yeah. And I, you know, I think I had a very high bar in my mind for what, like, there's a lot of these like AAA applications out there, like, I don't know, like a Facebook or a Spotify or something. And you're like, I need to be like, have all that stuff. And then you're like, yep. But wait, they're billion-dollar businesses or multi-billion-dollar businesses. You have teams of hundreds of engineers, you know, have some self-compassion around that part of things and realize it's not, it takes a lot of time and effort and growth of the business to get to that point where everything's just polished and everything's moving on all cylinders on all the different sides.
Such good advice, because we have so many people that are like, hey, build us TikTok. We're like, well, first off, like, or build, we want to be the next Facebook. Facebook has hundreds, thousands of engineers doing these and building and stuff like that. And it's like, literally get a product out, solve a problem. And what do you need to solve yesterday? And honestly, Austin and I, we harp on this all the time. Like, listen, I know you want your product to be this in 3 to 5 years, but what does it need to be yesterday? And it doesn't need to be near what it is in 3 years, right? And even right now, Zencastr alone, like what you want Zencastr to be in 3 years is probably very different to what it is today, or even 6 months ago, a year ago, things like that. So I think that's such a good advice for our listeners. Like, hey, it's okay to like just solve a problem in the most simple way and then polish it later.
Well, and even if you know what that master plan is, you don't. Like, you think you know, but you don't know. And we were just having this conversation in a meeting today where one of our members wanted to know, like, what does this look like in 12 months and 3 years? Once we know that, then we can figure out what we need now. And we're like, we know vaguely, we have an idea what we want, but it's really an exploration that we're on. We're on a exploration journey. Not, we don't know where the destination is yet. We think it's somewhere northeast, you know?
But, yeah. And then sometimes these curveballs called like COVID like happen. Right. And then it changes the whole, I bet you that was a huge pivot, which we can talk about, but like you have an idea where you want to go, but
life just changes.
And the sequence, even if in the end it's going to be all the same features together, the sequence at which you release those is really important, because there's kind of this dance where you've got to like build something that has value today but also gets you further towards your goal tomorrow, that also doesn't leave your existing users behind or upset or cause, you know, change it so that it's no longer serving them well, right?
And so you're telling me, Josh, you need to learn how to walk a tightrope.
Kind of. Yeah. Once you have loyal creators on the platform, there's a whole other responsibility to, and they'll let you know if you screw up, for sure. Podcasters are not known to keep their mouth shut.
Yeah, for real. That's what they're passionate. So let's talk about like this journey you're on, right? Let's talk about like a struggle, like one of your most difficult challenges that kind of came up. Whether it was early on, maybe it was yesterday, like what is a big challenge that you ran into and how did you overcome that? Like, what was the process for that?
Yeah, I think one of the, and there's many, many, but I think one of the ones that comes to mind is transitioning the business from a solopreneur lifestyle business into something broader, something bigger, and now a high growth startup. That's not an easy transition to make, and it's, frankly, investors get scared when they're like, oh, you're a lifestyle business and now you want to be a startup, because they're like, do you know how to start up? Because it's not like it's not like running a lifestyle business.
So let me make sure I understand and our listeners understand. So the transition from like, hey, this is me and a couple of people building this and it's maintaining my lifestyle and we're happy with it, to I want to be able to get funding and I want to build this into a huge company. I want to build this thing. I want to grow it rather than maintain and keep me happy day to day. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, I think kind of what happened is I was building a lifestyle business, but I also made some decisions early on that primed the company really well for a startup. Namely, I've always had free plans. Obviously, when we were open beta, it was free. But then when we kicked on paid plans, again, because I had such little confidence in the pricing or because it's $20 a month. Then, and it's still $20 a month. And that's really just because my buddy Al told me he'd pay me $20.
I'll pay $20. Yeah. Thanks. Yes, thanks, Al.
I think I wasn't honest. I didn't realize this about myself, but I think I had the startup mentality already. And I just didn't It was too big of a dream for me to think of by myself. And so I kept my expectations low. I was like, I want, I don't know if you're familiar with the 30 by 500 book, Amy Hoy, I think is the author, but it's about how to get financial freedom by just getting 500 people to give you $30 a month doing whatever. That gives you 15 mm-hmm. grand a month. And that for most people, you can find a way to kind of, you know, live well.
Live.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Even not worried about day-to-day finances. So that was my like base goal. And I wanted the financial freedom. I wanted geographic freedom and decision-making autonomy, whereas kind of the goals that I had going into this. But I was also like, I don't want to give anybody a reason not to use Zencastr. I want everybody in the world to use this thing that, you know, that would be great. And so I always kept the free plans. Once we started charging, we actually did pretty well. I mean, because I waited so long, it was kind of like popping the clutch on like an engine revving high already. We did 12 to 15K MRR in that first month. And then just kind of been growing organically.
So let's talk about that month, Josh, because you know you're nervous, right? You are scared to do a premium service. You're scared nobody's going to want it. All of a sudden, boom, 15K of monthly reoccurring revenue comes in like that. What was that feeling like?
By the end of the month, when I figured out how much it was a magical time for sure. But I think the moment when it really dawned on me, it was the first payment that came through, because I had like Stripe up and I had like I had my notifications, so it would ding me if I got a payment, and the first one came in, and I was just like, hot diggity dog, it worked.
Hot diggity dog.
Somebody, your confidence just every time that little ding happened, the confidence went up a little bit, right?
Yeah, no, I kept that ding on for longer than I care to admit, because it was just I got
like, revenue.
Yeah,
that's revenue.
Satisfying.
But it was, I think that very first payment came in, I was like, wow, holy crap, somebody somewhere. And I know who it is. It's our first paying user, and he's still a paying user of Zencastr. And the idea that I was making money while I was sleeping was pretty relieving and intoxicating after going through like, you know, I had like 70, 80 grand on credit cards at this point.
I was just going to say, you max credit cards out, or you're living on like borrowed money. And all of a sudden when you're sleeping, that money's being paid, like real money.
Yeah.
Man, so, our listeners are just drooling right now. They're just like, dude, I cannot wait for that.
So to answer your question though, the hard thing, that was like the good part, I guess. The hard part was, now that I've got money and now that I've got a company that is kind of primed for growth with the freemium plans and all that stuff, and it was growing, and it just kept growing every month. I mean, that's the beauty of SaaS, is unless you're screwing up, like it just keeps growing every month. You get more and more and more. Mm-hmm. The podcasting space when I started was kind of boring. Like nobody, it was small. Nobody really cared about it. There was like these dedicated players, but it wasn't like a big thing. Like there wasn't money in it, right? For like a big funded company to come in and like, you know, build a multi-billion dollar business on, right? But as I was building this and launched it, that's when like Serial came out and This American Life, and these are the ones that got like a million downloads per episode and got real popular. And then everybody, Spotify, Amazon, Google, you know, I think Facebook is a podcasting initiative now, Apple, all the big players are now diving into the space. And so it was kind of this thing of like, it was a hot space. It was already growing. We were seeing that in our numbers. Then all these big players got involved. And then it was kind of like, not only does this company want to grow, but if you don't step on the gas, you're just going to be eaten up by these big, well-funded players coming into the market. And I think that podcasting is a really cool space. I think the free and open kind of podcasting ecosystem, I think, is important. I think it makes the world a better place. And I think podcasters deserve really great tools built by people who are kind of, you know, grassroots players and are not just trying to come in and take over podcasting and turn it into something else, you know, that only maybe benefits them, right? The owner, the big business. So yeah, it was kind of a double-sided thing, like, hey, this has got legs and it's getting crowded out there. So, and that led up to the reason for raising money, just to accelerate. It's been really clear since the early days of Zencastr what this like full featured podcast creation network could be. But getting to that point with someone who had such little resources and such a small team and starting from basically nothing has been hard has been hard, and just deciding to go down that road. Because quite frankly, I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder about venture capital up to that point, because I had been, you know, basically snubbed over and over. And I was also really proud of the fact that we bootstrapped it to, you know, it was about 2 million ARR before we raised. So, wow.
Geez, that's super awesome.
And I'm just going to say that I bet you it was way different story going into these VCs with the 2 million ARR than it was with, hey, I have this really cool idea.
Yeah, seriously.
No, it was a totally different conversation. But I think COVID is actually what I think really gave us the right foundations. Because even with that revenue, you know, I wasn't doing any marketing because our users kind of marketed it themselves for us. And so it was organic growth. But we hadn't really tried to grow it big. And so we didn't have like major growth numbers. And I always felt like there's a lot more product that we need to build. That's how we do right by our existing create users is make the product better for them rather than trying to focus on, you know, getting as many people into the product before it's where I want it to be.
So if you want to find out more about Zencastr, you can visit their website at zencastr.com or find them on Twitter. That's spelled Z-E-N-C-A-S-T-R, Zencastr.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you found it useful, it would really help us if you shared it with a friend. Just take a quick second to text it or to DM it to someone who would also love this. It would seriously make our entire day. Also, if you want to go deeper, we have full-length videos of all of our episodes, show notes, and a lot more at strides.dev. There's no .com at the end of that. You literally just type strides.dev in your browser.
What else? Well, if you're looking to build an app, we want to talk to you. You can book your free strategy call and talk about your app with a pro at strides.dev. You can also sign up for our newsletters that gives you the ins and outs of what's going on. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.